Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
Warning, Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor.
I'm Olivia Cornu.
Saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. Before we get started, as always, Olivia, it's wonderful to see you. How are you? How has your week been?
Hey, John.
Hey, hello there.
I don't know why I did that.
No, that's fine. I like it. I'm leaving it
marker?
In.
Marker? No. Okay. No, really. My week's been good. How was the weekend and Millie's birthday party? I think Millie had her birthday party this weekend.
Yeah, it was really good. We had Millie's birthday party. It's a little before her actual birthday, but she was super stoked about it. Had a lot of friends show up. And, you know, it's really cool when you're a parent. I think when you have a kid, especially as they get older, you kind of worry, like, you know, are they going to be social? Are they going to get along with other? Are they going to make friends easy? Especially when I think when they're an only child, because they don't have that like sibling built in. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool to kind of see all of her friends show up and just to see like how much she's loved by these other kids and how much she loves these other kids back, you know? So it was a lot of fun. They had a blast. Cool. Yep. I gave each one of them 2 cupcakes. I was like, get sugared up, go home, have a great time. So, but how about you? Are you doing okay? I know you said your allergies were bothering you. How are you hanging in?
Oh, man. I don't know. Yeah. So I sound a little congested. It's going to go through some various stages, but I've had a rough allergy weekend. So that's all the excitement that's been going on with me.
Well, I am sorry that you haven't been feeling so great. I don't know if it's just like the weather changing all of a sudden, but I've been feeling the same thing, just a little like stuffy and sinus stuff and things like that. So hopefully, if you're listening, you're feeling better than Olivia and I are, but we are here. We're happy to be doing an episode. Again, we are sticking on the theme. Olivia, I wanted to give you this warning as well as the listeners, because, you know, I know we do the content warning in the beginning of the episode, you know, every week, but I will say this one is really kind of heavy. And so if you're overly sensitive to things, this may not be the best one for you to listen to, but I just don't want anybody to feel blindsided or anything like that. So I figured I'd go ahead and give the disclaimer, but it is on that Halloween theme. This is a crazy case, and I cannot believe it's taken us like 3 years of Halloween episodes to get to this one. I don't know if you like peruse. I know you normally don't, but did you look at anything? Does anything look familiar to you? Anything like that?
Well, I think I figured out why it might be a little heavy, but no, I didn't really go through the, I see the year and I see some things, some details, but I don't, you know, I don't read them. I like the shock value. I like to listen to it live and in person, John.
I know. I'm the opposite where I'm like, what are we getting into? Like, let me get prepared, you know, make sure I know what's coming, but you are very much in the heat of the moment. You want to know what's going on. So, but I don't know. What should we quit with the Gabby Gabby, get to the Stabby Stabby, just jump into this week's Halloween themed episode?
Yeah, let's get started. I'm excited to hear about it.
All right. Well, let's do it. For this week's case, we're headed to San Jose, California on Halloween night in 1984. Doreen Herbert had taken her 4-year-old daughter, Deanna, trick-or-treating. Her husband, Charles, stayed home, passing out candy to the neighborhood children. Now, this was a special time in the couple's lives. Doreen was pregnant, and they'd been trying for a while, and the process had been difficult, with Doreen having 2 miscarriages in the years before. And the baby was expected in early November, just after Halloween. Now, Doreen was born Doreen Ray Hitchens in 1952 in Santa Clara, California. She was raised in a loving home with a close family, and her childhood was peaceful and filled with support. As Doreen grew older, she found a passion for helping others, and this led her to pursue a career in medicine, and she would eventually get hired as a physical therapist in the Bay Area. Now, it was around this time that Doreen met the man who would become her first husband, William Michael Dennis, but friends called him Mike. Mike worked as a sprayer at the Lockheed factory in the area, and as a child, he had suffered from a hearing loss issue. This caused him to speak with a stutter growing up, and when others spoke, he would stare intently in an attempt to read their lips. Mike would use a hearing aid to help, but remember, at the time, they weren't discreet, and the child would carry a large box in his pocket with the earpiece being connected by visible wires. And I don't know if you've ever looked at this, Olivia. I did like look it up to see what it looks like. But have you seen what a hearing aid from like the 70s looks like?
I honestly don't know what they look like.
It looks like a Walkman where it's like a speaker and it like, you know, goes in your pocket, but it's about the same size. And there's wires that just come up to the earpiece. So there's pictures of some kids that have them like on a chest harness. Where I don't know if like it's like a microphone and it just feeds directly into the ear. But, you know, when you think about where we are now, where it's just like you pop it in, people can barely notice. It was like, you know, right. You look like half robot because you had just had this big, you know, box that you were carrying around with you.
Yeah, I can't say that I would wear mine. That would be kind of like when the orthodontist said I had to wear headgear. I'm like, I'm not wearing that in public. Good thing it was only at nighttime.
Right. But if you're one of those poor kids, it was like, you got to wear it, you know, 365 days a year.
But nope, I'll have crooked teeth.
Yeah, but I just thought it was interesting because I had never like considered that that was a technology that had grown in the way that others do. So when I looked it up, I was like, oh man, like I would have been so embarrassed as a kid to have to rock that around every day. Now, because of this, Mike didn't interact much with others and he would shy away from a conversation. When he was 9 years old, his parents would divorce, and it was around this time that Mike would develop an eating disorder. This caused him to gain a significant amount of weight, and he would struggle with that throughout his adult life. By the time Mike was between the ages of 19 and 20, he had developed serious depression, and feeling that he would never be able to get a girlfriend, he made an unsuccessful suicide attempt. But when Mike met Doreen, things felt different. The pair seemed to hit it off immediately, and he told his cousin that he had found, quote, the one. The couple would date for only a few months before deciding to get married, and shortly after, they would have a baby boy. They named him Paul. Mike loved his newfound role as a father, but the pressure of being new parents seemed to put strain on the relationship. And in 1977, with Paul being about a year old, the couple decided to call it quits. Now, Mike and Doreen would share custody, but he was bitter about the divorce. Still, he cherished his time with his son. Doreen, however, was able to move on much more quickly. Shortly after the divorce, she met Charles Herbert, a local carpet store owner. And by 1979, Doreen and Charles had a baby girl, Deanna. Now, at the time, Charles and Doreen lived in a home with a pool in the backyard. And at some point, Doreen's dog had fallen in. Unable to get out, the family pet would end up drowning. Now, this incident made Mike concerned for his son. If the dog could fall in, baby Paul could possibly do the same. So he asked Doreen to build a fence and offer to pay for the entire project, which the Herberts happily did. But it wouldn't stop tragedy from striking. In February of 1980, 4-year-old Paul was in the backyard. It was there that he managed to climb through a gap in the fence surrounding the family pool, and sadly, Paul fell into the water. Not knowing how to swim, the baby began to drown. Now, Doreen was home at the time, but she didn't notice until it was too late. Paul was pulled from the pool and rushed to the hospital. The child was put on life support for about a week, but he would pass away 3 days after doctors removed ventilators and feeding tubes. Now, the entire family was devastated, but Mike Dennis took it especially hard, blaming the death of his son on his ex-wife. Mike would even go so far as to file a wrongful death suit against Charles and Doreen. The case would go to trial in 1982, but the judge would ultimately side with Charles and Doreen, agreeing that it was a tragic accident with no one at fault. And it would lead the Herberts to cutting off contact with Mike completely. But Mike's life continued to spiral out of control. He lost his job as a sprayer at the Lockheed factory on October 1st, 1984, having to take a salary reduction to remain employed. His mental health deteriorated, and he continued to blame Doreen for the death of his son, with Mike growing more and more bitter. And it only worsened when he found out that Doreen and Charles were expecting their second child.
This is a really tragic story, and I feel like we're just at the surface of what's about to happen. It's sad that little Paul, you know, drowned and lost his life in the pool. And, you know, some people just deal with tragedy and grief in very different ways. And, you know, Doreen and Charles were just doing the best they can, you know, raising their kids. They had the safety fence and stuff installed. But it's just sad. I don't know. I feel like this one is going to be kind of heavy.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things, too, where, you know, I think when a tragic accident happens like that, like obviously everybody is heartbroken. But when I was doing the research, a lot of what I was reading was like Mike would spend time with Paul and Paul would be like, I want to stay with you, Dad. You know, I want to stay here. And on the day that he took Paul back, you know, he had asked, like, can I stay with you? And, you know, custody agreements or such. It's guilt. You got to go to your mom. And then later that day, from what I read in the research, is when it happened. So I think a lot of it was him blaming himself, blaming Doreen for not watching him. I know that he had made accusations that, you know, she smoked a lot of marijuana and probably wasn't paying attention to him. And, you know, but from everything that I could find, it really just was like this, you know, terrible thing that happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, that it wasn't easy for Doreen to lose her son. But, you know, she had Charles, she had her, you know, she had her family, Deanna, where Mike just kind of seemed he was already in a dark place. And then he was all alone on top of that. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's just a nightmare. I wouldn't want any parent to ever have to go through. It's just it's heartbreaking. I can imagine. I mean, I don't want to imagine. It's horrific to think of something like that happening, you know.
Yeah, well, let's keep going because I feel like Mike is going to be the bad guy in this case, but that's just me guessing.
Well, let's do it. So by Halloween night, 1984, Doreen and Charles were excited for the arrival of their baby. After returning home with Deanna, Mike told Doreen that he was making a quick run to the store. He was going to grab more candy for the kids and stop by the liquor store. Charles told Doreen that he would be back in about 15 minutes, but it was getting late, and he suggested that she lock up the house for the night. And with that, Charles drove off. Now, After running his errands, he returned home, and when he went to enter the front door, he noticed that it was unlocked. He thought that this was strange, as he had asked Doreen to lock up after he had left. And when he opened the door, he made a terrifying discovery. There, lying on the floor in a puddle of blood, was the body of his wife, Doreen. Shocked, he raised his eyes toward the living room to see the fetus of his unborn child lying on the ground. Now, at first, Charles thought Doreen may have miscarried. Remember, they had had a history. You know, just your mind wants to rationalize what's happening. He was like, okay, she must have miscarried again. But as his eyes swept the scene, he made another startling discovery. Near the fetus was Doreen's decapitated hand. Charles rushed to his wife's aid, trying to stop the bleeding by holding onto her arm tightly. It was then that he noticed other severe cuts to Doreen's neck and stomach. He rushed towards the phone to call 911, but slipped in one of the large puddles of blood on the floor. When dialing the emergency service, he wasn't able to get through, so he called the fire department and a neighbor for help. Charles then returned to Doreen, and he continued to try and stop the bleeding. But it was then that he noticed his daughter, Deanna, hiding in the living room. Charles grabbed the girl and rushed her into the kitchen, hoping to save her from seeing the graphic scene. It was then that first responders arrived. Doreen was placed on a stretcher and loaded into an ambulance. But when Charles attempted to climb inside with her, he was stopped by the police. Now remember, at the time he was covered in blood and he had alcohol on his breath. And because of that, authorities believe that Charles may have actually attacked his wife. So he was placed in handcuffs and put in the back of a squad car for over an hour. Now, Doreen would be pronounced dead by the time the ambulance reached the hospital. And as first responders continued to investigate the home, they found that the left leg of the fetus had been severed. Sadly, a paramedic determined that it could not be resuscitated. As shocking as the scene was, investigators still needed to continue their work. They noticed that blood covered the ceilings and upper walls, indicating that it had probably flown off of the weapon used to attack Doreen Herbert. There were slash marks on the front door and the 8-foot ceilings. And on the front porch, a wolf mask was found lying in the corner. Now, shortly before 12:30 a.m., investigators found themselves at the front door of Mike Dennis. They noticed a light on in the bedroom, but there was no answer when they knocked. So the police had county communications call the home to inform Mike that the police were outside. Officers heard the phone ring before seeing the bedroom light turn off and the hall light come on. Then they noticed the sound of running water before Mike finally came to the door. Detectives informed the man that Doreen had been attacked and asked if he would be willing to answer a few questions. Mike agreed, and he and the officers sat down at the kitchen table. Now, once seated, Mike was told that Doreen had not survived the attack, and he responded with a straightforward, "You're kidding." But while speaking, a sergeant noticed something suspicious almost immediately. Mike's fingers on his right hand seemed to be severely cut. In fact, they were bleeding through the gauze that wrapped each finger. Mike was asked for consent to search his home, which he allowed. And while investigating, detectives found drops of blood in front of the washer and dryer machine. As they continued, more blood was found in the kitchen. A pair of blood-stained jeans were located on Mike's bed, along with a set of bloody car keys. Additionally, more bloody bandaging was found in the bathroom trash. And it was then that officers arrested William Michael Dennis on suspicion of murder. After, they continued their search of the property. Police discovered a trail of blood that seemed to start about 100 yards west of Mike's home and proceed up the driveway. They also investigated Mike's truck. It was dusty, but they noticed that the window and handle had been wiped down recently. Inside, there was blood on the ignition and the radio. Now, a week later, a formal search warrant was executed of the home, and inside the closet, authorities would find an adhesive label for a Stanley 18-inch machete. However, the weapon itself wasn't found inside the residence. but they were able to locate receipts that showed the machete was purchased at a local hardware store. The wolf mask found on the Urbards' porch would also be identified. According to witnesses, the mask was worn by Mike Dennis to a Halloween party a year before the attack on Doreen. In fact, authorities were also able to track down a photo of Mike wearing the exact same mask, along with a set of rubber werewolf hands. But the most damning evidence would be found inside of Mike's garage. While searching, detectives found two handmade wooden coffins. It would later be determined that one was built for Charles and the smaller for Doreen. There were also body bags, weights, and a map of the San Francisco Bay.
Mike lost it, and I want to know why, and I'm thinking I'm probably not going to know why.
Yeah, it is definitely not looking good for him, right? As I was going through, I was like, you know, it's not a good look when you've got two coffins in your house. There's blood everywhere.
Everywhere?
Yeah.
You have the mask on in photos. It's in your truck. I mean... Guilt. And if you get down there and say that they find him not guilty, I'm going to lose it. He's guilty.
Yeah. It's a, like I said, it feels like, you know, and again, not to, you know, make a pun or anything like that, but it feels like he's putting the nails in his own coffin, you know, like literally. So.
And just to like agree without even having a search warrant, I'm like, no, dudes, come back later. Get your official paperwork.
Yeah, that really blew my mind too. And I mean, we can talk more about it at the end, but the fact that he was like, yeah, go ahead, search. I don't have anything to hide. And they're like, there's blood on everything, dude.
Yeah.
So
keep going.
All right.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Well, on that Halloween night in 1984, Mike Dennis waived his rights and agreed to a taped interview with detectives. Now, during questioning, Mike denied attacking Doreen, and he told police that he had been home since finishing his work at around 4 p.m., telling detectives that he had been outside briefly when a few children stopped by for candy. When asked about any past Halloween costumes, Mike mentioned several, but he failed to inform detectives about the Wolfman costume he had worn the year before. Mike even had an explanation for the cuts on his hand, claiming he was tossing a knife in the air and accidentally caught it by the blade. He told detectives that he had eaten dinner with his mother, who lived in an apartment behind his home, but witnesses near the Herbert residence shared a different account of events. Don Isbell, a neighbor, told police that he had stopped by the Herbert house to trick-or-treat with his kids. As they left, Isbell noticed a man in a wolf mask standing in the street and staring at the house. Another adult out with their kids told police that they saw a man in a wolf mask and a mechanic-type coveralls near the home at around 8:55. The witness said the man was walking towards Doreen's neighborhood and holding a large grocery bag. Now, despite all of the circumstantial evidence, police technically didn't have enough to hold Mike Dennis, and he would be released after 48 hours. I think it's also important to note, Olivia, that in the research, I found that he only lived like 6 blocks away from them in like another neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So he literally could have walked to their house in like 6 or 7 minutes. So, you know, it wouldn't have taken very long for him to, you know, be somewhere and then come back. Right.
Right. Right.
Now, on November 5th, 1984, Mike would be arrested again. Authorities were able to run tests on the blood that had been found at the crime scene, and the killer had the same blood type as Mike Dennis. This time, he would be formally charged with murder with special circumstances, making him eligible for the death penalty. And I also thought that was really interesting because, you know, obviously this is 84. This is before, you know, we could process DNA the way that we do now. So they were basically all they could do was look at blood type. So they're like, you're covered in blood. Your blood type's all over the house. You've got coffins in your garage. Just like, you know,
you did it, man.
But I was thinking, like, thank God there were, because there was so much blood there. I would imagine it. The scene was probably pretty contaminated. You know what I mean? Like it. I wonder how hard it was to be like, we're going to be able to pull individual samples, because it seems like that would have been a nightmare.
Yeah, because didn't they say that Charles was like covered in blood from slipping, and there's no telling what he touched? And
well, also, like, Charles, when he got there, you know, Doreen's bleeding out from her hand being severed. So he's holding her arm,
right,
just getting drenched, and then he's falling in it and, like, you know, rolling around and picking up his daughter. And, you know, so, like, again, just thankful for those crime scene technicians who were able to be like, okay, we've separated these samples. Cause I don't know if it wasn't for that, if they ever, even though all that circumstantial evidence was there, it'd be crazy if they could be like, well, we can't really say for sure. We don't have the hard evidence. Right. Yeah. Mike's trial would begin in July of 1988, and he would originally plead not guilty by reason of insanity. Deanna would testify to what she remembered of that night, telling the court that she answered the door with her mother on that Halloween. When Doreen opened the door, she told the man in the wolf mask to get out of her house, to which the man replied, "I'm going to kill you." Doreen told her daughter to get behind the couch, so she did as her mother said and hid. Deanna shared that she couldn't see what was happening, but she could hear the violent incident occur from her hiding place, leaving once to get a blanket after she thought the killer had left. Then she stayed in place until Charles returned home. Now, the defense would argue that Mike had been driven mad by the loss of his son, and that watching kids play on that Halloween caused him to fly into a murderous rage. William Michael Dennis would ultimately be found guilty of first-degree murder for the death of Doreen and second-degree murder for the death of her unborn fetus. Several appeals would be filed, but in September of 1999, he was sentenced to die in the gas chamber. Now, California would eventually deem the death penalty unconstitutional, and his sentence would be converted to life in prison. But Charles and Deanna would refuse to let Mike Dennis win. In a 2016 interview, Charles was quoted as saying, "I want him to know that we survived and we're making it. He hasn't conquered us." So that is this week's case. Olivia, what are your thoughts? What are you thinking? You know, let's break it down a little bit.
Wild, crazy, scary. Those are the top three contenders right now. You know, this is someone that he fell in love with and had a child with and a marriage with. And I know he had depression, it sounds like, before all of this. But to just show up, see this woman who has, you know, moved on and has created this new life and this new family. And, you know, tragically, both of y'all's child is taken from you. it's scary to see how dark people can get.
Yeah.
With trauma and tragedy and grief. And that's kind of where I just keep thinking. I'm like, he was so traumatized and sad that he had so much anger and rage built up in him that he could kill someone who brought the person that he loved the most in this world onto this planet. Like, that's scary to me. I don't know. Those were kind of deep thoughts, but I'm kind of just speechless in a way.
Yeah. Well, and like, that's the thing for me too, where it's like, it just feels it was kind of the perfect storm where mm-hmm. he was already predisposed to all of these things. And again, I have no way have any sympathy for Mike Dennis whatsoever. Like, what he did is
he's terrible.
Yeah. He is a legit
he's a monster.
Yeah. Legit a monster. But with that being said, I think it is in some cases, it's able to kind of look at things and be like, well, this is why this person became
the way what he became. Did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it really does feel like this was the perfect storm for him. Like, he, you know, had this medical condition with his hearing loss that, you know, kind of forced him into a position of being antisocial and had low self-esteem and, you know, tries to commit suicide, but he can't even, you know, succeed at that. Right. Then he finally meets somebody and he's like, oh my God, this is like the person. This is, you know, what I've been waiting for all my life.
Changing around.
Yeah.
All the things I thought I couldn't have, here they are right in front of me.
Right. And now I'm a dad and I love being a dad and I love my son. He's the best thing that ever happened. And then to have that not only stripped away and you lose your child, but to see, you know, this person that you loved, like the mother of that child, has now moved on, has started a new family, is expecting another child, you know, like, again, no sympathy for him, but because of the circumstance, I can see how someone with mental illness would be like, you get to continue. Of course you're not upset because you get to have a new family. Like, and how could you forget about him? Yeah. So, you know, again, not excusing, and it doesn't, you know, it's not logical whatsoever, but you know, from all the episodes that we've done, I'm like, oh, well, this is how this happened. You know, yeah. I don't know if it was like, I was watching the kids on Halloween and I just went into a murderous rage, but you know, like, you don't watch kids on Halloween, go out to the garage, build a couple coffins and then be like, I'm going to go. Like, this was something that he had been planning for sure.
Oh yeah. 100%. And it just so happened that like Halloween was coming around and probably all part of his plan, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, to think about Charles, right? Like, he loses his wife. He lost it, the baby that was going to be born was going to be a boy. He lost his son.
Deanna was sitting there listening, hearing all of this happening.
Yeah. You know, and I know I didn't mention it much in the story, but when California kind of made their decision on the death penalty, Deanna was like, I can forgive, but I can't forget. And he deserves to die for what he did. Right. And I know I've talked about it before. I'm, you know, the death penalty is a weird thing for me because I don't necessarily think like taking the life of someone who took a life really drives the, you know, it drives the point home. But I could get, you know, being Deanna, being Charles and being like, yeah, dude, like put him in the gas chamber and cook him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And the fact that they were able to, like she said, like forgive, but not forget. Like, I don't know if that's anything I could ever do. It's just one bad thing after another. And it has left, you know, someone dead, an unborn child dead, and then just a family in, you know, shambles for probably generations. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is something that you don't just move on from. This is generational, not true generational trauma, but technically generational trauma, I guess, where this is something that's going to be talked about from here on out.
Well, like, Deanna grew up and got married. You know what I mean? And I, you know, like anybody who's been through trauma, like, that affects, I can, you know, again, speculation, but I can almost guarantee that you know, that has affected her relationship with her husband in some way, or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, things like that aren't like, oh, you just get past them and then you're, you know, I work through it, I'm good. Yeah. There's always that, you know, that grief, that trauma just pops up at times that you would never expect it. And it does, it causes you to have to like work extra hard in relationships with people. And, mm-hmm. you know, just thinking about this little girl behind a couch hearing this terrible stuff happen to her mother. And like, I teared up a little bit when it was like, you know, after she thought the guy left, she was like, she went and got her blanket. Like she wanted, it sounded like she wanted something to like make her feel safe, you know?
I mean, I'm just really trying to not have that graphic image of what this was. And just imagining when we're talking about what Deanna heard. I mean, he took a fetus out of her at some point. We don't really know how old this child was.
Oh, I know. Are you talking about you talking about the fetus or Deanna?
The fetus.
She was 8 months pregnant.
Okay, yeah. So that baby probably came out, I would assume, made in some noise. Not sure. Don't really want to know.
I'm going to tell you because you brought the point up, but in going through some of the court documents, and then what's crazy is that there's not a ton of articles on this. There's, you know, a few, but when you really like try to dive into it, a lot of the cases we do is like you can find, you know, 15 different sources. Yeah. This one, it was literally like three or four. But in some of the stuff that I read, it was like, yeah, she could hear the baby crying. You know, like at 8 months, if, you know,
they would have that baby would come out crying.
It would have been viable if, mm-hmm. you know, if Mike hadn't have done what he had done, you know? And so it's just, it's heartbreaking, you know? And like, not only do you know that like your little brother and your mother were murdered, but you heard it, you know what I mean? And like, just thinking about my own kid, I had like, tears coming down my face being like, that would be terrifying. That'd be like, mm-hmm. you know, cause you know, like they talk about it with horror films and stuff like that. It's the stuff that you don't see that your imagination fills in. And to be luckily, you know, this happened when she was 4 years old and she testified when she was eight. And in her testimony, she was like, I don't really remember a whole lot, you know, cause I'm only four. So there was that aspect for me where I was like, well, thank God, you know, she was four and not eight or 10 or, right. you know, hopefully a lot of that, like with age kind of gets buried. But like I said, I'm sure it's still like, you know, you got to work through that, you know. But if we're talking deadbolt test, where does, and I have, you know, I have a feeling I don't even need to ask this question, but if we're talking deadbolt test, where does something like this fall for you? What are you thinking?
10, 10, 10, 10, really a 15, but 10. What about you?
Oh, it's a 10 for sure. And like, we didn't really even touch on this, but like the idea that you open the door and there's somebody at your front door dressed as a werewolf holding a machete, like that in itself would, I mean, that's horror movie canon file. Like, yeah, like I would have froze up immediately. And it sounds like she knew instantly who it was. It was like, get out of here. You know,
yeah, leave. You need to go. Well, she probably recognized the mask.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the body type, the stature. I mean, like, this is someone she was married to. This isn't just a stranger. The time between all of this happening, you know, them separating, she moving on and getting pregnant. Paul was like two. So like these two kids are just 2 years apart. And that's just such a recent figure that's been around you, you know? So it's not like you just forget or been like, oh, it's been 10 years. He's gained some weight. I can't really tell who it is.
Oh, yeah.
And the voice, you would probably know the voice.
100%. And let me show you what this mask looked like, because it's also like the element of, so it's this one right here.
Oh, yeah. Like that. You remember that.
Yeah. And it's also the element of like, you know, it was made in like the 70s or 80s. So it's got that like you ever look at like kids in like in the 30s and Halloween costumes and they're like terrifying. It's like the, it's one like the, let me show you.
Oh yeah. No, change it. Take those away. Those are terrifying. Those are scary.
Yeah. So it's just got this element of like.
Just so. Just bizarre.
Like, yeah.
That's bizarre.
Like, again, just it's like extra creepy because
that would scare me if that showed up at my door.
Yeah.
Any of those.
And those are just little kids. But like, it's that same element of like. It's an older mask. It's, you know, when you look at it now, you're like, that is insanely, insanely creepy and menacing. And I don't know if it's because, you know, you're tying in what you know has happened. But like, if somebody showed up at my door in that thing, I'd be like, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Like, yeah. So I don't know, man. Like I said, this one was a heavy one. That's why I wanted to give that warning up front. But, you know, it's just so much damage being done. And like I said, no sympathy whatsoever, but like you can see the lines. You know what I mean? A lot of these cases we do are like, man, I wish I would have known like what happened that made him this way. In this case, you're like, it's laid like, out.
We know.
Yeah. 110%.
Really bad life.
Well, that is where we fall in the deadbolt test for this week's case. Olivia and I are both coming in at high tens, but as always, we need to hear from you, the listeners, the locksmiths. Where does the murder of Doreen Herbert and her unborn child fall on your deadbolt test? You can let us know. Reach out to us on Instagram at CheckTheLocksPod. You can find us on Twitter at CheckTheLocks. And if you're not in our Facebook group, what the heck are you doing? Come hang out with us. We'd love to get a chance to get to know you, spend a little time with you. You know, it's the best place on the internet. So come hang out. If you need the link, it is in the description of the episode that you're listening to now. Come hang out with us. We'd love to have you as part of the group. So Olivia, you know, that was a heavy case. As always, I like, you know, a little palate cleanser, something to kind of clear the taste out of the mouth. Do we have any reviews or anything this week?
I'm really sorry to bring this devastating news on top of this devastating episode, but we don't have any reviews this week.
Oh, no.
And I don't think we have any voicemails either.
No, not this week. So if someone wants to leave a 5-star review, because you know we love them, especially on a case like this, right? It really helps to kind of clear things out on the back end, make you feel not as bad. So if somebody wants to leave a 5-star review that could be read on the show, what is the best way to do that?
Go to the Apple Podcast app. Go to our show's homepage, scroll down where you see all 5 stars, click all 5 stars, and leave a little review.
That's right. And Olivia always says it best, so I don't have to. Apple Podcasts, leave those reviews. Let us know what you think. They really do help us get into other shows' recommendations and help new listeners find the show. So if you haven't had the opportunity to leave that review, please feel free to leave one. We'd love to read it, get you some goodies out. It means the world to us. Now, you can also leave Spotify comments. We'll read those as well. You can send us an email. And of course, you can always leave us a voicemail if you're in the United States by giving us a call at 615-920-9393. Again, 615-920-9393 if you're in the United States. If you're not in the States, you want to leave us a voicemail, we still want to hear from you. Again, feel free to head over to checkthelockspod.com, click the voicemail icon. You can leave us a voicemail right over the interwebs. We would love to hear from you. Again, you can send us an email at contact@checkthelockspod.com. Send us smoke signals, telegrams, whatever you want to do. We would just love to hear from you. Now, Olivia, with that being said, I know we don't have any reviews. We don't have any voicemails. I still wanted to end on something a little positive, maybe a little bit lighter. So I did want to share this with you, but I'm going to share my screen here in just a moment because Jill in our Facebook group said, like Olivia, I fear shower killers. And she shared a video that really made her laugh. So I wanted to share it with you, get your impression of it, see what you think. See if this is real life footage of maybe you in the
shower. In the shower.
Yeah, so let me get my screen shared.
That video is 100% me. Like, hey, here's your warning sign. If I go missing, if something happens to me, people are going to know. Oh, by the way, I'm a little crazy, so don't come in the shower.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. We weren't sure if we could play the audio or not, but the video is somebody in the shower just basically like, if you don't know, I'm in the shower. I know karate and I'm really good at it. And the shower is filled with knives. Yeah.
Which means you need to go join our Facebook group so you can see this video.
Yeah. He's like, I grew 6 inches and I've got a lot of muscles. So don't try anything. But I love it because we talk about stuff on the show and it's great to hear when, like, hey, we're not the only ones, right? So, Jill, thank you for sharing that. It really made us laugh. The other thing I really wanted to do to end on a little bit more of a positive note, I also wanted to just shout out, you know her, Olivia, you're a big fan, but one of our patrons, Carissa, actually graduated with her bachelor's degree in August. So just wanted to say congratulations, Carissa. Super proud of you. Way to crush it. And again, just super glad to have you as part of the family. Thank you, you know, so much for supporting us, and way to rock it out with that bachelor's. I know having a wife who, yeah, having a wife who's smart and is in school, has done all that. I know it is very hard. It's not meant for me. So
you're smart too, Johnny boy.
Not book smarts. So Carissa, congratulations.
You got the tech savvy. I got the book smart. You got the tech savvy in this relationship.
Right. But yeah, either way, super proud of you. I just wanted to take
congrats,
a moment.
Yeah, Carissa.
So again, that was a really heavy story. Just wanted to end with something a little lighter there, something a little more uplifting. So,
well, I have a really cool story that I don't know that everybody may have seen on my Instagram or not. But I went to the dentist on Monday, so I'm doing basically Invisalign, and I had to go get my new set of trays. So I'm in there, and I didn't see the dentist this time. I just, you know, saw someone who was helping me. And I'm just standing there talking, and I'm the first appointment in the morning, 8 o'clock. And Christian, I don't know what his job title is, but you know, he helps the dentist with procedures and stuff. He doesn't like clean my teeth, but you know,
yeah,
some sort of dental
assistant.
Hygienist. He's more helping than an assistant, I think, but I don't really know. Anyways, long story short, he's standing there and he's got on this black jacket, and in between the black jacket, like when it's unzipped, I can see this hand. And I'm like, I know that hand with a knife. And so I'm like, are you wearing my shirt? And I'm like, not my shirt, but like, are you wearing my, like the podcast shirt? And sure enough, he had the Gabby Gabby Stabby Stabby Check the Lock shirt on. He ordered one for himself and one for the dentist. And so shout out to my dentist, Audubon Dental Group. But he said, this might be HIPAA, I'm not sure. He had a patient who was like, can I listen to my podcast while I do my procedure? Turns out, it's our podcast.
Oh, so man.
Someone was listening, whoever, you'll hear this one day, was listening and got Christian at my dentist excited about the podcast. But he was only on like episode 6 or 7, he said. So he is real fresh into Check the Locks.
Oh, yeah. We got like 200 plus. So buckle up, Christian.
It just made me so excited. And if anybody saw the picture, I think you could tell on my face at like 8 in the morning how like, oh, my gosh, this is so cool that someone like just genuinely learned about our podcast, ordered our shirt, and is now a fan.
Yeah, it's cool too. That is like, cause you sent me the picture, and when I heard the story, I was like, oh, it's awesome. That's like organic, right? Like,
yeah,
somebody was listening to it and they were like, what's that? So, you know, that's again, it really just talks about like how sharing what we do and stuff like that can help kind of get the show out there and just create amazing moments like that. So that, mm-hmm. I mean, you sent me
it
that
really
picture.
It started my week off like great. And I just told my mom, like, I had a great day that day. And I think it's because it generally just started with like a high note, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Christian, thank you for rocking the shirt and ordering it. We really do appreciate it. Like I said, I know there's a lot of different stuff you can spend your money on, especially nowadays. So mm-hmm. It really means a lot that, you know, you spent a few bucks to represent us. So thank you so much for that. And if you like what we do, you want to help financially support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/checkthelocks, get signed up today. We got a lot of great tiers, exclusive benefits, stickers, coffee mugs. Plus, you get the episodes commercial free. So if you love Check the Locks, but you hate those ads, Patreon is the way to go. So again, you want to help us out, keep the lights on, make sure we're able to still do this little podcast that could. patreon.com/checkthelocks, get signed up today. And if you can't financially support the show, we definitely understand. Just listening and sharing what we do with your friends and family, playing it in the dentist's office, the doctor's office, the DMV helps just as much, if not more. So if that's you, you know, hey, can I listen to this podcast? Can I show you this podcast? You're sending it to people that matter to you. Just know that we appreciate that more than we could tell you. Again, it's about that organic growth, right? It's going to help us get in front of new listeners, really extend our family. And that's really all that we're looking to do. So if that is you, you're sharing what we do, just know we appreciate you more than we could ever tell you. That is all that we have for this week's case, but please make sure that you are subscribed to Check the Locks on your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. We will see you again next week with another truly terrifying true crime case, but until then, don't forget to
Check the Locks.
See you next week.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
percent of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise Ready AI.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.